Hello, good morning and welcome to the Finance Show, tiptv.co.uk. It's 10 a.m. on Wednesday, the 20th of April. And in the studio today, I have Mike Ingram, my co-host, who's a strategist at BGC Partners, and Simon French, who's chief economist for Panmure Gordon. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Zach.
Today, I'm going to try and be as conventional and as normal as possible, a proper host and interviewer and just a friend to the masses. Simon, what's on your mind this morning? Have you recovered from Mark Carney's comments yesterday to the another firing squad in Parliament?
Well, he seemed very calm, didn't he? He seemed to be cautiously treading that path between the politics and the economics of the referendum. But there were some interesting comments also about the strength of the UK labour market, the attitude of the Financial Policy Committee towards buy-to-let, the buy-to-let sector and those leverage ratios. He suggested that actually there's been an awful lot of new regulation, tax changes in that space, and the FPC want to stand back and wait a little bit longer before taking further action. But I think his comments around the labour market just in the last half an hour have been echoed with a fairly middling set of labour market stats, which have really been the outstanding data point in the UK economy for the last couple of years. We saw a slight nudge up in unemployment, but you're going to get that when you're pretty much at the full employment level. And actually wages fairly stagnant, 2.2% growth year on year has pretty much been flatlining for recent months.
Well, I'm not wanting to get on my favourite topic of immigration, but isn't it amazing that this country has managed to absorb so many people from the EU and elsewhere and still have full employment? I mean, we're a jobs making machine here.
It's a success story, and 330,000 net migration is the current run rate, and the economy currently running about 770,000 vacancies suggests that it can continue to absorb immigration at that rate, certainly from, if you look at it from the narrow sense of the labour market perspective. Clearly the debate is much broader in terms of the
infrastructure,
public services and infrastructure, but from the narrow setting of the labour market's ability to take workers and actually generate economic output, It's an undoubted success story.
So we can believe, you know, the sort of the CBI type comments of, you know, this is good for business, you know, being in the EU and free movement of workers, etc., around the place. It's all good news.
Well, from a narrow setting of GDP growth, the CBI are correct, and from the perspective of employers having a varied and growing labour pool, keeping wage inflation under control in certain parts of the sectors for a brief period of time, then yes, it is good news. But then there'll be plenty of your viewers hurling things at the telly right now going, but it's a much broader debate. And it is such a broader debate. But we have to expect comments from the CBI to focus on the areas that their members are most interested in. And that is principally the ability of business to source skills and a ready supply of labour, and immigration provides that.
Right, I'm going to try and control myself. I don't want to be knowingly agreeing with the CBI on any topic. But on that note, I will pass over to Mike.
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, if we're closer to a more optimal skill set coming into the UK labour market, why is the UK economy so lacking in productivity? I mean, of course, this is the dark side of the employment miracle, isn't it? And how much can be laid at the door of this sort of massive influx that we've seen?
I think the productivity problem, and let's call it that, first of all, isn't unique to the UK.
Sure.
It's something that has prevailed across almost all developed economies since the financial crisis. A lot of the damage that was done with the sharp contraction of the finance sector, which spread much wider, has limited the ability of productive companies to grow. And indeed, there is certainly a school of thought, not one I necessarily subscribe to, that zombie companies are continuing to be able to operate, even though they are less efficient than potential competitors, because they have access to capital markets at very, very low levels of interest rate. And that creative destruction isn't enabling productivity to be driven forward as it did prior to the financial crisis.
I think RBS is a fine company. I would never describe it as a zombie company at all. Let's go through to the charts.
You never mentioned RBS. You infer that.
Right. Today's slides. The Tip TV Finance app is available to download on the App Store and Google Play for those who are interested in watching us later on during the day on their mobile devices. Join us on Twitter at Official Tip TV, the Tip TV family, for the latest news and updates. What's trending? In oil, Russia isn't backing away from the price war, plans to boost production and exports. So another shocker for OPEC. Just when you thought it couldn't get any worse. The BOJ, in fact, we also had the news of the Kuwaitis ending their strike. So that didn't help OPEC either. Mm. BOJ's Kuroda says no limit to QE. There's no limit to anything in life. I think you should call it a bodge job,
is it?
Interestingly, overnight, the Japanese trade data came in at 6.8% year-on-year fall. Mm. Sets the Japanese economy up for a technical recession in Q1, and that data comes out on the 17th of May. I mean, Kuroda has to say that because, to be honest, such is the economic headwind that economy is facing. Printing money and no limits to that is pretty much the only game in town.
I mean, how long before BOJ has to pull the trigger once again? Do they just want to get the G7, G20 out of the way and then...
It probably needs to see what the Fed does, and the Fed meets next week. Yeah. There is an interesting face-off emerging between Draghi, between Kuroda, between Janet Yellen. Indeed, actually, domestically, the Bank of England just sits in the middle of that and just sits tight. The MPC members claim their salary and don't need to do anything. So it's.
Those are my lines, not yours.
Right.
So on the Brexit poll, latest Brexit poll, US TNS EU poll, 38% remain, 34% leave, and 28% don't know. How can you not know at this stage of the game?
Well, interestingly about that, don't know. 28%, a little bit higher than most of the polls, but all of them around the 20% mark, suggesting there's a lot of people who in the last days will take a look at the state of the nation, the economy, what is the cost of filling up their car, have they got a job, are they getting a wage rise, and vote from that perspective. And we know that kind of on a 2-to-1 basis, those people tend to go with the status quo, which in this case is Remain.
I can't believe it. I thought Ian Botham would turn the whole thing around, but so far it hasn't happened. Mike's morning markets overnight. Asian markets, little change. The biggest slump in 2 months in China offsets gains elsewhere. PBOC signals less accommodative policy. Crude oil falls after Kuwaiti oil workers end strike and removes the cushion of Doha disappointment. Iron ore rises. BHP joins Rio Tinto in cutting production forecasts. And then later this afternoon, the Bank of England's MPC member, Ian McCafferty, who is apparently a hawk, will speak. And the company's reporting later today, or earlier today in some cases, SAP and Arm, and then Coca-Cola and American Express. Ultra-low yields make QE ineffective. Can anyone explain this?
Well, it certainly limits what can be bought in the Eurozone, because no bonds that yield less than the deposit rate in the Eurozone can be purchased by the ECB. But of course, they have gone so low, and with the, I think economists have woken up to the idea that the textbooks were, let's not mix our words, they were wrong. The deposit rate can go negative and go fairly negative, probably the order of maybe 1%, maybe even 1.5% before you see some really perverse behavior. You see some isolated examples, for example, in Denmark, companies bringing forward their tax bill rather than deferring their tax bill. But you haven't seen the broad-based removal of cash from the banking system that most people expected as soon as you went into negative territory.
So, I mean, actually, I was interested that economic textbooks were wrong. Is that just because of the financial crisis and after that, that we have to sort of rewrite everything? Or was it they were always a bit dodgy?
Well, I think we never really empirically tested this in a real-world setting, and therefore in the laboratory of economic modelling, you would assume that as soon as you have to pay to deposit your money, it would lead to people withdrawing money from the banking system. But actually, we found the cost of holding money, even under your mattress. People have clearly got some quite mouldy mattresses out there and are prepared to pay significant premiums, actually, to remain in the retail banking system.
Well, that's when you get the conspiracy theorists saying, well, that's the reason why the ECB would be quite happy to see the 500 euro note pass into obscurity, because they actually want to keep it within the banking system.
And how long before this debate really gets started, and the Bank of England, in terms of Andy Haldane, have kicked this off around the complete removal of physical currency and the replacement with digital currency, and therefore enabling that lower bound, that negative lower bound, to be extended even further.
Plumbers everywhere would be up in arms. It could never happen. According to Nicole Elliott, battered government finances due to lower oil prices and reluctant to draw down foreign reserves, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia prepares to shift from creditor to debtor nation status. This is the shocker of the year. Consortium of global banks have lent $10 billion to the government, not a big amount, I suppose, for a period of 5 years. Fund managers believe this will pave the way for a bond issue, the first in 25 years, where the same banks are likely to get preferential treatment. One assumes all borrowings will be Sharia compliant. Next slide. Announcing its results yesterday, chipmaker Intel saw revenues rise to $13.7 billion from $12.78 this time last year. Profits up 3% to $2 billion. The big news was that it was going to slash 11% of its workforce. 12,000 jobs work worldwide as its focus turns to data centers. So, again, one of these big businesses just, you know, they become profits machines rather than really wanting to employ. I mean, the workers are really down at the moment in terms of all this.
Well, ultimately, these workers are all consumers, yeah. So, I mean, I would suggest that capitalism at some level is consuming itself. Actually, that number, the 3% rise, was actually a disappointment for the market, and IBM numbers also disappointed.
Going to the earlier point about productivity, one of the other explanations, we talked about zombie companies, but one of the other explanations is there is such digital disruption going around through business models, sector by sector, systematically changing that structure, that the historic ways of matching capital and labour, which ultimately drives productivity, is undergoing a reinvention, and we haven't quite worked out how labour matches up with a digital economy to maximise output. And until that is realised, productivity rates will remain very, very low.
What I'm saying is just whether multinationals are doing well or badly at the moment, they're still just sacking people anyway. That's the impression that's given, just to be as lean and mean as possible.
Well, I'd be careful of reading across from an individual corporate story into the macro position, because let's not forget that in economies that have their own currency, and so I immediately exclude the Eurozone from all of this, they're nearing full employment. So actually, there are arguments around part-time working, irregular working, the people who want to work full-time, and some of the discouraged workers and the falling in the participation rate. Actually, in those people who are looking for work, there's very little evidence that they're struggling to find it in a material sense.
Right, let's just have a quick look at the Forex open positions. According to Oanda clients, we've got silver at the top of the table there, where they're long, and that has been back. That's been the most persistent long position for the last couple of months, and it's come good in a big way. I think silver's up at least a dollar since that's been the case. Dollar Canadian as well, bullish. And on the short side, euro dollar and euro sterling, better than before, less painful than before, but still going against the grain on that. Just a few or three broker situations to look at. First, BT. We hopefully have the chart coming through there. According to Mike.
We hope
in a minute. What was the latest, the change there for today? Did you note that down, Mike?
The change? He's stall for time. BT, well, we're looking at Jefferies downgrade.
That's what I was looking for,
from buy to hold, well anticipated.
Right.
475 price target, rather less bullish than the rest of the market. The market is still relatively constructive. On the name, the average price target out there is £5.10, about 50%.
Right.
Upside. I mean, a lot going on in the sector at the moment. Obviously, the Consumer Monopolies Authority has had doubts over the tie-up between Hutchison 1 POAS 3 and Telefonica's O2. So you might think that that's good news for BT Group. Unfortunately, what may come out of this, if this is confirmed by the European Commission, and I think the 19th of May is the deadline on that one, that you might end up in a situation where Liberty Global, which obviously bought Virgin Media last year, ends up buying O2, and that's going to be a much stronger competitor for BT going forward. So there are some doubts there as to BT's position within the sector. And of course, you've got the ongoing debate over BT Openreach, and CMA obviously not terribly happy with BT's entrenched position there either.
Right, the last couple of upgrades, downgrades?
Paddy Power, Betfair, I mean, Credit Suisse have downgraded their recommendation and target price. To cut a long story short, they're basically very They're not convinced by the merger benefits with Betfair. They're saying that they don't think they're going to get the market share gains that the market is imputing in the forward forecasts, and cost cutting basically isn't enough. And lastly, we did have Ashmore Group, SocGen cutting recommendation from buy to hold. It's a specialist emerging market hedge fund. The emerging markets have actually outperformed the global indices thus far this year, but they're taking a view that there is trouble ahead.
Right, Mike Ingram, strategist at BGC Partners, and Simon French, chief economist for Panmure Gordon. Thank you very much for now. We'll be back after the break.